This podcast is produced on the lands of the Cammeraygal people. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and acknowledge the thousands of years of storytelling on this land. This episode contains references to war, distressing cultural material, and mentions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have passed away.
Yeah, ones is a, it looks like silver. The medal is silver and it's a Dutch writing on it. The ribbon on the medal is yellow with a red vertical stripe down the middle.
You're hearing the voice of Neville D'Antoine, Uncle Charlie's nephew.
Red one right down the middle of it.
On that. In the last episode, we spoke to Uncle Charlie's family. They told us in detail about the awards he had received for saving the lives of three Dutch people during the air raids on Broome in 1942. They also told us that even though Uncle Charlie was awarded for his bravery by the Dutch government and the Royal Humane Society of Australasia, he never really thought he was a hero.
It's remarkable, but Uncle was that kind of person. You know, he did what needed to be done and didn't make a big deal of it. But I think it was the people he couldn't save that bothered him the most. He would talk very little, you know, it was very short sentences when I spoke to him about it, and then I thought I'd back away because this is very painful for him.
I'm Pauline Roesink, and this is Uncle Charlie, the Invisible Hero, a podcast from SBS Dutch and NITV Radio.
A lot of people went above and beyond that day, and Charlie was one of them. Where Charlie was a bit different is that he certainly didn't get the recognition.
Over three episodes, I'll be speaking to historians, community members, survivors and family members about what it means to be recognized for heroism, to figure out why Uncle Charlie didn't get officially recognized by the Australian government. This is the third and final episode, The Cost of Being a Hero. Uncle Charlie's story is one that is well known by the local community of Broome. Earlier in this series, we heard from Michael Lake, a volunteer historian at the Broome Historical Society and Museum.
He was remembered as being a very quiet man who underplayed how brave he was, and it really required others to tell the story. And also, to a certain degree, it wasn't in the government interests of the day to publicise the fact that an Aboriginal person had been so brave. Charlie was not recognised by the Australian government. It was the Humane Society of Australia gave him a medal. And then it was quintessentially the Dutch government that recognised him. But it was a story that we, you know, wasn't quite swept under the carpet, but it was pretty close to it.
What is bravery to you?
Bravery is normally when a person chooses to act for the benefit of someone else, despite the presence of serious personal danger. And in many cases, this happens in a split second with no guarantee of outcome and no expectation of recognition. It's not about strength or success. It's more about the intent, the risk, and the selfless act.
I'm speaking to David Arden, the president of the Royal Humane Society of Australasia. He has over 50 years of experience in a range of roles across emergency, aviation, and security. So he understands bravery pretty well.
And the Royal Humane Society has been going for 150 years in Australia. We have two main purposes. We give bravery awards to people who have risked their lives to save someone or attempted to save them. We were the first organisation in Australia to establish a formal civilian bravery award with the original bronze medallion issued from the 1870s. And we're unique in that we also have a financial fund where we can assist people who have been financially disadvantaged by their act of bravery.
How special is it to receive an award?
We think it's important, and our evidence confirms that. And when we have investitures at government houses right around Australia, the governor actually presents the award to the individual, you can see there's an immense sense of pride. And each nomination is reviewed independently. We just look at the evidence, the circumstances. We compare similar cases, and it doesn't matter who the potential awardee or the nominee is. It can be absolutely anyone. And what really matters is the act itself. It's the act of putting yourself at risk to help save someone else's life. And that's why people get awards, and that's why they are valued.
David says that Uncle Charlie being humble about his acts is not unique. However, the after effects of being a hero can be damaging.
And how do people respond in general when they get presented an award?
Yeah, most often they're quite humbled. And they just said, well, I just did what anyone should do. But some of them have lived with the trauma for years, and the award helps them mentally, and it helps them give a form of acknowledgement that makes more sense of their experience. And it helps their families, and it helps their families understand perhaps more about when they were talking about the incident and why they might be affected by it. So it helps process grief. And it really importantly, it just makes sure that a person's courage is not overlooked, it's more recognised.
The Royal Humane Society offers a range of awards depending on the acts performed. You can get a gold medal for conspicuous bravery where the risk to life is extreme, a silver medal for bravery in hazardous circumstances, recognizing those who face significant danger, and so on. The Certificate of Merit that Uncle Charlie received in 1944 is one that is awarded to someone who honors selfless acts of courage and compassion where the risk to life was present, though not severe.
In this case, we are highly confident that Charles did put himself at danger to save a mother and her children. Rather than swimming away himself and saving himself, he decided to stay in the water when the Japanese were attacking and keep them afloat and therefore save their lives. And he really does deserve to be recognised, and we're proud that he was. And we're pleased to help tell the story so that people can build an understanding more about how brave he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Charles d'Antoine got a certificate, not a medal, for example, a silver medal. Do you know why?
Only judging on the evidence, the limited evidence we have, the board at the time would have assessed the risk to him. Now, there are actually four main levels of an award, a gold, silver, bronze, and a certificate. So a certificate is an award. It just doesn't have a visible medallion with it, but it is an award. It recognises his bravery and his heroism to do that. So when you go into a burning car and it's about to explode, then that is pretty extreme. When someone's pointing a weapon at you and threatening to kill you and you still go in and try and help someone, that's pretty extreme. So they're the sort of levels of risk we deal with.
These kind of risks, Uncle Charlie was swimming in water with burning oil, the Japanese were shooting at him, there were sharks in the water. To me, that sounds pretty dangerous. Do you think the fact that he got a certificate, which the fact that there is no proof from that time, there was no reporters, no TV camera filming everything, did that play part?
I think that would be part of it. Nowadays, sometimes we get to see some footage from the media and other sources. And that really helps. And certainly that lack of evidence is probably why. And without that evidence, then the board at the time would have thought, well, we really don't have the evidence. Maybe we would like to give him a silver. He probably deserved a silver, but we don't have the evidence. And so on the evidence presented in front of us, this is all we can get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So asking this question, if this would have happened today, do you think he would have gotten a different award?
It's hard to judge, but quite possibly, yes.
Yeah, I think some people will think, did it have anything to do with him being an Aboriginal man?
Yes, I suppose they will, and I can't answer that. I don't know. The times were different, but I do know that we have strict standards and we've maintained them over our 150-year history, and we're very strictly, it doesn't matter who the person was, what their background, how much money they've got, or whatever, anything like that, it is purely their act of bravery to help an attempt to save or actually save someone whose life was in danger.
Well, I think it's great that he got his recognition from the Dutch government and also the Humane Society. It is a sign of the times and deplorable that the Australian government didn't recognise him for his actions.
This is Michael Bell.
I'm the Indigenous Liaison Officer at the Australian War Memorial, and I'm a Ngunnawal Gomeroi man.
Have you heard about Uncle Charlie's story before?
Yeah, we've known about it for all my time in the job, but also prior to that because of his needs and actions with my friends in Western Australia. So it's not uncommon and it's not unknown story in the Aboriginal community.
I'm speaking to Michael because his work involves helping Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander veterans to get recognition for their work.
My definition of a hero is ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And Uncle Charlie has done that. Although we all think we would do the same in the situation, he did.
Yeah, he got the recognition from the Dutch government, not from the Australian government. Why is that, do you think?
I think because they just didn't want to acknowledge Aboriginal people could do that. They were in the midst of the White Australia policy and the protector of Aborigines, and to be seen to recognise Aboriginal people as human and as equals is against their policies. And so I think it was a denial by the Australian government to deliberately refuse the recognition because he was Aboriginal. It's a racist policy, and it was a repeat of what they were trying to do, is make the Aboriginal people less than.
Hmm. So you think if he was a white man, he would have got on a medal?
Definitely.
I wanted to know from Michael why it was so important to recognise the service of First Nations people.
The more we share the story of Aboriginal service, the more people get to understand that we were actually indeed there. Despite the restrictions on Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander servicemen and women being exempt from service, our men and women still served. Not only did they served with equality and dignity and heroism. In the First World War, we have 5 Distinguished Conduct Medals and 26 military medals, and other various award for bravery to our men across that conflict. In the Second World War, we have, at the moment, with ongoing research, we have 8 Aboriginal men identified for bravery. The recognition of those deeds by the military need to be reflected in society, but also the recognition of that we served in a time when we weren't allowed to needs to be recognised, to look for our men looking for a path to dignity and inclusiveness, and also that path to citizenship, where it was advertised to our men and women, come and join the army, you'll be a better chance of becoming a citizen, because we weren't classed as citizens. So that unequal society is not reflected in our service, and it never got reflected in our service, but we need to tell the story of, again, of the neglect of that recognition during the periods in which the men who fought in these wars have served.
Recognition is important because it affirms that someone's actions really mattered.
David, the president of the Royal Humane Society, says that recognition can also help in the healing process.
And for many recipients, particularly those who acted in isolation or in traumatic circumstances, formal recognition also provides emotional validation and helps ensure that their bravery is never forgotten. It helps them sometimes with their mental recovery from such a traumatic event. And it also offers families, colleagues, and other communities a way to honour that courage, especially in cases where the rescuer never spoke of what they did. And we think it's very important to have that recognition, and that builds up a community spirit and a sense of helping each other.
In the first episode, we heard from Dutch survivors Theo Doorman and Josine van Achelen. They both mentioned symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder.
In the boat, there were several wounded people. I remember I also had a sort of cut above my eye, and my mother took my handkerchief out of my pocket on the right side, and that was soaked with blood. It definitely made a large effect on me. For instance, my whole life I had in nights I flew up and I had nightmares.
I did have a little bit of trauma because I didn't like when people came near me when I was swimming. I had it for a long time, and I had to unlearn it by standing in the shower and putting the shower head on my face. And now I don't suffer from it at all, but it did take a long time.
When I came across Uncle Charlie's story, the first thought I had was about the Frenchman who was granted permanent residency after holding off the Bondi Junction stabber with a bullet. Why was Uncle Charlie not considered for citizenship after such a heroic act, let alone recognized by the government? Over the course of this series, we've learned that the cost of being a hero is the trauma you can be left with. But in Uncle Charlie's case, it comes with an extra cost. For his loved ones, the lack of recognition is a reminder that he was not seen as an equal citizen. Edie, Uncle Charlie's niece, says that this has lifelong implications.
At the time, in 1942, he was very much controlled by what they call the WA 1905 Aborigines Act. Now, that act governed every aspect of the lives of Aboriginal people who came under the Act. Now, that meant they had total control over where Uncle Charlie lived, if he was allowed to own a property, if he was allowed to own a house. They had total control over who he married, who employed him, what medical facilities he was allowed to go to when he was sick. He only had to go to the native welfare hospitals and even curfews. You know, we're now 83 years on. Surely there can be some posthumous recognition of him. You know, they have posthumous recognition of other people. So why not Uncle Charlie? It's closure. It's closure for the family, because that question of Uncle Charlie was good enough to be recognised by the Dutch and the Humane Society. Why? Why is he to this day not good enough to be recognised by our own country?
Michael from the War Memorial also agrees that recognition helps in resolving the pain from these histories.
The more recognition and the more inclusiveness that we can be seen as equals in society, the more it will allow for steps towards reconciliation, because we are the same. We're all human. We all bleed red. And that's what we need to be able to get through to people. Racism is a taught concept. If we can look at each other equally from the start, racism doesn't exist and everybody should be equal. So if our deeds of our old men and our deeds that have gone unrecognised get the recognition, people then will be enabled to see us as equal.
This reconciliation is ongoing, but it is happening. In 2017, two Wiradjuri men were officially honoured for their bravery more than 160 years after saving 68 people during a flood in Gundagai. So what does posthumous recognition look like?
It's about detailing what actually happened. We're working on a case at the moment for Aboriginal men in Arnhem Land who saved survivors of a bombed plane, the Patricia Calm, and trying to work that recognition. Everybody knows the story in Arnhem Land, but nobody thought to recognise the bravery of the men to travel the distances across very dangerous waters and lands to bring back help. You know, a 40-kilometre swim and a canoe and a run to bring back to supplies and help and assistance to the survivors who were kept alive by another Aboriginal man who fed and watered the men whilst they were waiting for the return. So that's an incident that we know of, and all that has to be done is be documented and these ongoing recognitions that these deeds did in fact happen. They're not just oral history that are supported by the Aboriginal men, but the families of the non-Indigenous survivors need to stand up and say, if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be here. Such as we have a lot of airplane dancers that remember Aboriginal communities finding down pilots. And recently at Borroloola, the descendants of the American air crew came back to say thank you to the Borroloola community. If it weren't for you saving our air crew and our descendants, we wouldn't be here. So that recognition needs to continue. And the stories and deeds of Aboriginal people in these acts of heroism need to be told and need to be understood.
We're now 83 years later. Unfortunately, Uncle Charlie is no longer amongst us. What would it mean if he would get posthumous recognition from the Australian government?
Well, it would be the Australian government saying, we acknowledge your efforts. It should be us taking the lead and talking about, we recognise the unequal society that Aboriginal people lived in, but let us share these stories. Let us give that due recognition. And I believe he got an updated award in 1992, Uncle Charlie, and there's some images of him with his plaque, but it still wasn't from the Australian government. And that's when he was still with us. And it was, again, unequal recognition from a civilian organisation in a foreign government, and our government weren't there, which is so disappointing.
For this episode, we tried contacting multiple politicians in both state and federal government. Unfortunately, none of them were available. Like our guests, we can all come to our own conclusions as to why Uncle Charlie wasn't recognised. But the reality is, there is no real answer as to why the Australian government stayed silent. When I started this series, I asked what it meant to be recognised. For many of our guests, it means healing. In this case, healing from the destruction that war can leave towns, communities and people with. But also healing from previous government policies.
Me personally, I would love to see something like the Charles D'Antoine Bravery Award. Something like that. Anyone who commits an act of bravery where they put others first, total selflessness, that they are awarded. You know, we have all these awards for other feats where Australians achieve. You know, why not start with something like that? And even just a certificate from the government posthumously to the family. Part of that reconciliation. How hard is it to be able to reconcile what Uncle Charlie did with the values that stack up with being an Australian person? You know, for the government to say, we acknowledge what you did 53 years ago. As part of an Australian person, as part of a civilian person who has remarkably improved the relationship between the Netherlands and Australia.
This is the final episode of Uncle Charlie, the Invisible Hero, a podcast from SBS Dutch and NITV Radio. I'm your host, Pauline Roesink. The NITV radio team is Carolee Berry, Alexis Moran, and Nari Pakai. From SBS Audio, the podcast team is Joel Supple, Max Gosford, and Bernadette Fong Nam Win. This episode was mixed by Mandy Coolen. Special thanks to Regis Ariel. Follow this podcast on the SBS Audio app or wherever you get your podcasts.